Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Hey, happy weekend. How you doing? Frank Rush here along with you. Summer is in full swing now, and we're going to talk with some folks here today that are very important to the legal system, not only in Vigo County, but in all the counties surrounding us and around the nation, too. Jan Hoff is the recruiter, trainer, and supervisor of Vigo County CASA. Jan, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Frank. How about you?
Not too bad. So let's delve into this a little bit. For folks who don't know, let's talk about what is CASA? What does it stand for, and what do you guys do?
CASA is an acronym for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And technically, we are considered an arm of the court. That gives us a lot of abilities to go in and do things that some other programs can't. That being said, what specifically we work for are the children of Vigo County that have been abused or neglected.
Okay, and that's your organization. But CASA itself, there's CASAs all over the place, right?
Yes. Actually, out of Indiana's 92 counties, I believe we're up to 87 that have this program currently. And in terms of the programs in the entire nation, it is a national program, and it is has an overseeing by a national group.
Okay, so for those that are listening in our outlying counties that aren't necessarily in Vigo County, but might be in, you know, I don't know, Clay Park and all the other places where there might be, where do you guys actually, I mean, how do they find you? Do they go through the prosecutor's office? Do they go through the court clerk? How would they find out not only about you in Vigo County, but other CASAs around the state?
Actually, if you just get on a cell phone or a computer and Google CASA for Indiana, you will find all kinds of websites. We personally in Vigo County have our own website, and I think just about all of the other counties have their own also.
When we say that you actually act as an advocate for kids, we're talking underage kids, those under 18, right?
That's correct.
And are they in trouble with the court, or are they there just simply because their parents are in trouble, or maybe not? How does that work? Why would they need you?
Okay. Anytime a child has been reported as being abused or neglected, they will be assessed by the Department of Child Services and recommended to the local judge, the juvenile judge, that they need services, they need assistance, they need protection, any of the above. Once that happens, the judge automatically appoints CASA to be involved with a case. So the children are not themselves in trouble. They are simply victims of lack of attention, physical abuse, sexual abuse, any kind of abuse you can imagine. And it's up to the CASAs to put eyes on the children, try to help define what their needs are, if it's clothing, if it's food, if it's medicines, and help obtain the things that they need to have a somewhat normal life. So it's not the children's fault by any means, but it is their situation in life as a result of their parents not providing the appropriate items they need to be taken care of.
And because they're underage, they can't provide for themselves as far as, like you mentioned, you know, going out and providing for clothes, food, that kind of stuff, or even hiring their own attorney or anything like that. That's why you guys pop in there, is because you're the one that's going to kind of oversee what the kids' needs really are and make sure that the folks that can take care of that and provide for them actually do it, right?
Absolutely. We become the voice of the child, and that's something that you will hear about CASA a lot. Some of these children are so young, they don't even have a voice yet, so it's even more important that a CASA is there. But even if they're up into their teens, they may have their own voices, but they don't know the appropriate ways to go about getting themselves heard. So we become the voice of the children, and we are the ones that can get that information to the judge, who is the one and only person that can make a difference.
And now, you guys really aren't attorneys, though, or anything like that, are you?
No, we are not attorneys, no.
No, but actually the folks that work with you, the CASA volunteers, you guys all go through training to figure out how to do what you do, right?
Absolutely. The national program requires 30 hours of training. And we have made that easier here in Vigo County by putting 25 hours of that online. And then the balance of, actually it's a little more like 8 hours, the balance is done in-house and is completed, and then we go over and get sworn in by the judge at the juvenile center.
There's a lot of demand for what you guys do. And I think that you'll never have enough volunteers to cover all the bases. But how many cases, how many kids do you folks deal with? You pick the timeline. Is it weekly, monthly, yearly? How many do you handle?
Well, to give you some idea, this year, as of June 30th, I should say, we are running about 40% ahead of where we were at the same time last year. It's kind of been a perfect storm. COVID has created an increase in cases, you know, lost jobs, frustrations, stress skyrockets, and then sometimes that just trickles down onto the children. So we have seen an increase in cases, and it's also kind of a perfect storm because at the same time we've lost volunteers because of COVID. Currently, we've got right at just a little under 900 children, and 175 of those, unfortunately, are still sitting on our wait list, which breaks our heart, but because we don't have enough volunteers, we simply can't get all of them taken care of.
My goodness, that's a huge, huge number. And so what happens to that 175 that you are not able to help or deal with? What happens to those kids?
They simply don't have anybody to go out and be the voice. Department of Child Services certainly does their role, but in terms of ICASA, which, you know, is the one that reports, becomes the eyes and ears for the judge, so to speak, there simply is no one available.
Wow. Okay. Now, when you've got this many, one would think, okay, if I'm interested and I want to help, my goodness, the caseload for the volunteers must be, you know, just almost insurmountable.
Well, we never give a brand new volunteer more than one case. Everybody needs time to kind of, you know, get their feet on the ground and figure out what their own approach is. But we do a lot of hand-holding even after the initial training. We'll go out with you on a first visit. We're always available by phone or text if you run into a problem so somebody can answer questions for you. And we assign you to a staff coordinator so that you've got a go-to person who can serve as someone that can immediately give you advice and help.
Judging by some of the cases that I know you folks handle and what the kids are dealing with, I mean, we're dealing with kids that, like you said, are abused in a lot of different ways or have other, you know, problems. It's got to be pretty hard on the volunteers when they first get into this to learn how to, I don't know a better way to put it, to compartmentalize and not become overwhelmed by what you see sometimes.
One of the things that I think makes a really good volunteer is someone who has a great heart and is willing to commit to helping others. But along with that, you also need to be able to know when to put on your bulletproof vest, so to speak, and step back and draw the line and not let your emotions get in the way so that it doesn't cloud your vision for what's best for the children and it doesn't cloud your own interactions with everybody that's involved with the case.
With the number of cases you have right now, about how many volunteers are you short?
Right now, we could use 20 volunteers tomorrow. And that would get us in much better shape than we are now. Above and beyond that, by the end of the year, our goal would certainly be to have another 20 or a grand total of another 40 than what we currently have.
If a person would be interested in this, what kind of commitment are they looking at?
We ask for a minimum of 18 months commitment. Now, that said, that's based on the average length of a case, which can run anywhere from 9 months to 18 months. So we definitely want to be the constant for the child and be able to take it all the way through to closure. What that boils down to on a weekly or a monthly basis is probably better. 5 to 8 hours a month, if you can spare that, that is certainly enough to be able to get out there, see your children, you know, make reports, and if you have to, go to court hearings, which are only every few months.
And with that said, though, that might mean that you probably need to have the ability to kind of schedule your daytime hours, at least a little bit, because like you said, it's not going to be all the time or even multiple days a week, but you want to be able to, you know, if you're working through the day and you want to get into this, you may need to take a half day off or something like that, right?
Occasionally, most volunteers, I mean, even the ones that currently are working, schedule their visits for evenings and weekends, and that seems to work out best, you know, with parents also. But there might be an occasional half day that you might need to take in order to go to a court hearing. Those are scheduled, you know, pretty far in advance, so there's always plenty of notice. And those only happen typically every 6 months and then another 6 months after that, so 6 months and 12 months into a case. So we're not talking a lot of visits to court by any means.
When you do these visits and that kind of thing, what do the volunteers run into? I mean, do they run into parents that are confrontational? Do they, you know, I'm trying to get a feel for what they're running into when they go knock on somebody's door and say, "Hi, I'm here."
Yeah, well, that's always a possibility. Now, in the few years that I've been here, we haven't run into any major knockdown dragouts by any means. But,
yeah.
You know, you have to look at it from the parent's standpoint. They can feel threatened. They can feel intimidated. So part of the training we do is to give people tips on how to approach the parents and build rapport and go about getting information from both the parents and the children. But the children are the number one focus. So that's really what we're there for, is to build that relationship with the child and not necessarily the parents.
Pandemic aside, there has always been an increasing need for what you do. I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, has there ever been a time where you've seen the caseload go down?
Not since 2010.
Yeah.
We've been tracking, we have a chart that tracks it back to 2010. At that point, there were only a little over 130-some cases, children. And now here we are at well over the 1,200 mark. So it's been a constant upward tick, but there was a huge explosion back in 2017. We don't really know what accounts for that, but it was almost a threefold explosion in numbers at that point.
As a trainer, what do you look for? You mentioned folks that are carrying that kind of thing, but as a trainer, what kind of people are you looking at that really makes you think, hey, this person's going to be okay? Or maybe what might be something that makes you think, nah, thanks for replying, but no.
Okay. Fair question. The current volunteers that we have come from all walks of life. So it really has nothing to do with your background. I mean, we have homemakers, we have PhDs, we've had medical doctors, we have active law enforcement, we have Marines. It's just any background you can possibly imagine. In my opinion, it boils down to the individual personality. It needs somebody who is willing to make a commitment and fight for the children and yet not get swept up in the emotions of it. As I was saying earlier, if you don't seem like the kind of person that can really put on the bulletproof vest, stand up and fight for the kids, you'll have a hard time doing this kind of work because it can be very emotionally straining at times. It doesn't mean that we don't all deal with it in our own way. You have to be able to. But as long as you're in front of the children or if you're in court, you've got to be able to put your emotions aside and fight for what's in the best interest of the children.
Training takes about how long?
Online, it's about 25 hours. Some people go faster, obviously, and some a little slower. but that's at your own pace and your own schedule. And then we bring people in for 2 half days. What we've been doing recently is Wednesday mornings and Friday mornings, 8:30 to 11:30. And we get 2 half days in, and then the following week we bring you in, have you observe court for a couple of hours, have the judge swear you in, and then we sit down and help you pick a case that you would like. And that's something else that a lot of people don't understand. They are actually in charge of picking what case they think they want to work on. We do not just point blank assign one and say, here you go. We sit down and let you read through a case and decide if, in fact, this is one that you think that you truly could be vested in.
When you say swear in, does that mean that you're actually an officer of the court?
Absolutely.
All right. So,
And when you get appointed to a case, you receive what we call an appointment order. And it is signed by the judge, which gives you access to visiting the child just about any place you can imagine, obtaining records and so forth and so on.
Which means you also need to understand, too, that this is something that you need to be able to not gossip about. When you take on one of these deals, that you need to keep it to yourself.
Confidentiality is huge. We ask that it's discussed absolutely with no one other than here in the office. And, you know, the office is a safe place because we recognize that there can be times where a volunteer just needs to come in and unload and get it off their chest, and that's perfectly fine. We get that. So here is where you bring it.
Jan Hoff with CASA of Vigo County. Now, if folks would like to volunteer, I know you'd like to talk to them. And if they're in the outlying areas, where do they go to find out how to get in touch with you or the folks in their own county on how and when to volunteer?
If they are interested in talking to me, they can certainly call the office here at 812-231-5658. I would be happy to have a phone conversation, make an appointment, have a face-to-face, whatever they're most comfortable with at this point. For outlying areas, it would be best if they simply looked through Google to find out where their local office is and contact that number.
All right, Jan Hoff with CASA of Vigo County. And again, if you missed anything that we talked about today, we'll, of course, have this entire program uploaded to our station's website. You can listen to it as a podcast, go back and hear it again and get the information you need there. Jan, we thank you for being with us today, and we thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.